Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution is made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. As you can tell, Steve and Justin are convinced that their new My 401k program could be a good solution for you, lending a hand to investors who need help making choices within their employer's program. My 401k ranks your current 401k investment options within your employer's specific plan based on current trends and long-term performance. Then it builds a portfolio that corresponds to your personal risk tolerance. Take a look at it. Click on the Investments tab on investtalk.com and then My 401k. End of commercial. And now today's Invest Talk. You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Invest Talk. I appreciate you being with here. And, of course, I'm here to help you reach the retirement that you want, whatever that is. I know it's financially, you want to be financially independent, but we're going to try to make that goal in retirement, whenever and whatever that is. You can achieve the retirement goals you want, but you have to work at it. You got to be persistent. You got to be disciplined. It takes effort. It takes effort. And most people don't want to put the effort. They just want it to happen. Well, I wish it was that simple. It just is not. You got to do it. I can help you. I want to help you. And it's doable. It's really doable. So what money questions have you been saving? If you call now between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific time, we can talk directly, or you can call whenever it's handy. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. We'll try to answer your question on the next Invest Talk.
Hi, my name is David, and I have three investment accounts, one an individual that I use for short-term trading, two my 401k that I actively contribute, and three is a rollover IRA from a previous company. My question is, what recommended percentage do you believe that I should keep in cash in my rollover IRA, and what percentage to keep in active investments? And I will listen to your response on the podcast. Thank you.
If you have 5 to 10 years left before you retire, before you need any of this money, you don't keep anything in cash in your 401k. You keep investing. Now, having said that, you should stay mostly always invested. You can be sharper. You can be sharper in that. In other words, I kind of like having some cash right now myself, but I'm a professional money manager. You as an individual, you can't time the market. It's impossible. So you might as well just stay in. Stay in. You can adjust your portfolio. Yes, adjust it, make changes to it, tweak it, depending on your risk tolerance and how much you want risk you want to take, versus how much you should be taking or how much you are taking. You don't have to be that involved in your 401k. You can just continually be invested. Trying to get out just in cash and then get back in when you think the market's good. It's very, very difficult, not only because it's very difficult to know when to get out, but most people mentally can't handle the when to get out, when to get in part. In other words, they get out when they start to see the accounts falling. That's not when you get out or start to produce cash. You produce cash when it's run up. Then you produce cash. And most people can't get back in when the market has fallen sharply. They don't know where it's going to stop. They don't know when to get back in. They wait till it turns around and comes back up. And usually it comes back up. And by the time you got out and the time you got back in, you bought, you sold high. You sold probably middle, not high. And bought probably right back where in the middle, because no one knows where the bottom's, and everybody wants to make sure the bottom is in, or make sure that I buy it when it started to come off the top. It's impossible. So stay in the market. For a beginner, not knowing how to, you're not having a lot of knowledge, you just stay with the market. As long as you have enough time to make up any big downstrokes. If you have time, 5-10 years, then don't worry about it. Let's go to David in San Jose. How you doing, David?
Hey, Steve, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I had a question. What the Fed, they came out today with this restriction on commodities. I'm just wondering what that means, and more specifically, what does it mean to gold?
They came out with a restriction on commodities. I did not see anything like that.
Where it was in regard to brokerages or banks holding commodities.
Huh. It must.
Yeah, they placed a limitation.
Well, I know that they're, you know, there's more and more restrictions on banks on the types of things they could do, which is why I have not, you know, recommended big banks for quite some time, because I know it's going to squeeze their profits. But I didn't see anything specific out today. Is that, you saw something specific out today about that?
Yeah. It was all over Bloomberg this morning, where it was breaking news. The Fed placed they came up with a reserve or limitation on commodities for banks in regards to how much they can hold.
Well,
and I heard a little bit about it, but I wasn't sure how that affected gold, and naturally commodities went down today, so.
Huh. Well, I didn't see it, so I must, I don't know, I do a lot of reading, and I didn't see that, so I really can't make any comment on, other than I know that the laws are changing, and they are restricting banks from doing all kinds of things or risky things they used to do routinely. And I knew that they were going to have some restrictions on commodities at some point, or already did have it, and I just wasn't really paying attention. I don't think you and me need to worry about it too much, because the big banks and all those people, they trade those commodities. They don't hold on to them. They're doing trading, and that's how they get in trouble. They make a lot of money, or they lose a lot of money over their trading, and that's one of the reasons why they're getting restricted on various things. But again, that's why I also said I'm not keen on the big banks as owning their shares, because their profits are going to be reduced, their ability to make profits. So I don't think you should worry about you as an investor, what the banks are going to do or not be able to do. I don't think that's that important. Commodities is more based on economics. Yes, it's tempting to reach for the highest yields and fixed income investments, but there is a price to be paid for that decision. Don't get talked into taking too much risk. And that's one of our talking points today. Let's go to Marcia in San Diego. How are you doing, Marcia?
Yeah, I'm trying to help my son in his investing. And
okay.
So currently he has a 401 with the company that he works for. He's been there for approximately 2 years.
Okay.
Putting in around $400 a month.
Good for him.
So he doesn't really have very much in there. But
can I ask how old he is?
The Roth is really a better investment.
How old is he?
28.
And is a Roth a better investment?
Yes.
I'm going to say yes, especially if you're 28. You know, he should fund a Roth IRA first before he goes into his 401k. Does the company match money for him?
No.
There's what's called Roth 401ks.
Oh, really?
Well, they have to choose to do this, first of all. So he should ask his company, are you guys going to do a Roth 401k? Because then he could put more money away into a Roth 401k than a Roth IRA.
I need to find out, and hopefully by calling you, what would be a good place for him to open up his Roth.
He wants to open up a Roth IRA. He can put up to $4,000 in it. And that's about what he's doing $4,800 a year?
Yes.
So he puts $4,000 in the Roth IRA and put the $800 into his regular 401k.
Okay,
now how does he do that? He can easily go to almost any brokerage house. And I would go to a discount one. You could do it at eBay. But I would probably suggest maybe the Schwab One program. As a matter of fact, I don't even use Schwab, but I don't have any ties there.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a no-load, no-transaction-fee mutual fund program called the Schwab One program.
Mm-hmm.
And they love the IRA. So he could open up a Roth IRA at Schwab and say, I want it in the Schwab One program, and I'm going to fund it with $400 a month. And then once he has enough to buy in there, he can buy some mutual funds. And why I like it, because there's about 2,000 different mutual funds he could buy from.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all no load and no transaction fees.
Yeah, that sounds really good.
Yeah.
Now, who makes the decision as to what is going to be going into the Roth? I mean, what is going to be purchased in regard to the mutual funds?
He does.
Okay.
Now, he can hire someone like me, okay? And that's fine, but then you got to pay me. On a smaller account, I don't think it's worth it. If he does this, Marcia, if you have him call me at my office, I will give him some mutual funds that we like, that he can get the prospectus from, mutual funds that are sold at Schwab that he can buy, and I'll give him some choices.
Okay. Oh, that sounds wonderful.
No cost, just because I like helping people, and especially a 28-year-old just getting started.
I know. That's so important, and I think he's really starting to see
it. Mean, the 28-year-olds, and you know, they don't think they're ever going to get old, but they do.
Yes, I know.
Just like we did.
Exactly. Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you, Marcia. I appreciate the call.
Bye-bye.
I've got a couple of check updates. Up there in Northern California, to schedule your hour with me, just go to InvestTalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab. 888-99-CHART. Follow the prompts.
You're listening to an encore presentation of InvestTalk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next InvestTalk.
888-99-CHART. I'm going to go talk to Art. How you doing, Art? Menlo Park. How's it going?
Good, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank
I just
you.
Wanted to ask you about, I was thinking about opening up a Roth IRA and using it as a emergency fund if I need to get to it. Because I've got another IRA already, a regular IRA.
Okay.
And I just wondered if it would make any sense to put money into a Roth IRA and just having the money in there, so then if I needed emergency money, then I could pull it out.
Well, you can, in a Roth IRA, you can pull out your contributions into the Roth IRA anytime you want without penalty, but you can't pull out the growth without a penalty.
Right. I would be pulling out the initial investment.
Yeah. So long as you keep yourself to that, you can use it that way. I mean, it's not what it's designed to be used, but you can. There's nothing wrong with that because, you know, there's no penalty in there, and you know, there's no tax consequences. So you can do that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the concept. Let's put it that way.
Another question about that. You have to keep it in there for 5 years. Is that correct?
Yeah, there are some limitations and rules that you have to pay attention to, and I'm not an expert on that, but yes, there are limitation rules, so just make sure you're aware of them before you open one up. All right, appreciate the call. Good question. Thank you. Don't get talked into too much risk. That's one of our talking points today. Okay, and I also want to talk about what do you do when the insurance company increases your life insurance and long-term care insurance as you get older? This is more and more of becoming a problem. Cost of long-term care and life insurance policies you already have, and what do you do when they start increasing the premiums? Okay, taxpayers, do you know a large percent of the population pays no income tax? None. We'll talk about tax, income tax, the types of taxes. And we didn't get to it yesterday, but I want to talk about the national debt, which is closing in on $20 trillion with a T. What's that look like, $20 trillion? Is that with a stack of $100 bills, how high would that go? What does it look like? And that's what we're going to talk about. Those are things that's on my mind and that I want to share with you. Do you have anything you want to talk about and share with me? Willing to talk about. Did you see the upgrades on Walmart today? You know, there were some upgrades on Walmart, which is surprising because, you know, it's been kind of in the dumps and people don't like it. And I have to admit, we do own that in our managed accounts. But I just thought it was interesting that what they said about it. Anyways, Why not sign up for our free InvestTalk Insiders program? There are many informative info sheets on all kinds of financial topics, like economic indicators. It looks at how to interpret economic reports from the various government and non-government agencies. Sign up now. If you'd like to, at investtalk.com, just click on the InvestTalk tab.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
How about Mike and Santee?
I had a quick question for you about stops, where to place them. And what happened is I got into the market pretty heavily, and I picked a lot of winners there. And so they went up a little bit. I put my stops pretty much at the support level where I bought them. That was the reason I bought them, because they were down at that point.
Right.
Now, they went up, and then I didn't know when to adjust or kind of where to put the stop, so I kind of just let them sit at the point that I bought them. So what happened is I went up, and then I went back down, and I got stopped out of pretty much everything that I bought, which I made a good profit, but then I lost it all back. So my question is, where and when and how often should I adjust those stops to save some of that profit?
Okay. We adjust our stops on a daily basis, but you can't realistically do that. You cannot. So if you have a job, you've got work to do. You can't sit here and spend hours, a couple hours every night looking at adjusting your stops. You know, it's just not possible. But what you need to do is at least look at them at the very minimum once a week and reset them once a week.
Okay.
If you see a stock, let's say you bought a stock at a great, support level, like you say you did, Mike.
Uh-huh.
And you say, okay, this is about where they stop going down. This is a really good buy point. And then it rises up. There's several rules that you can establish for yourself, and you can pick what's comfortable to you, but one of them is followed up with an 8% stop. In other words, anytime it's below 8%, if it's high, you get out. That's the Investor's Business Daily rule. And that's nothing wrong with that rule. I find it kind of arbitrary because some stocks are very volatile and some stocks are not. Mm-hmm. And you get stopped out too quick on some, and then some others, you take a big hit because it takes a long time to get down to 8%.
Yeah.
So I adjust it per the stock. And many times it could be, I like to draw trend lines. If you think the market is getting too heady, you can draw a tight trend line. It breaks the trend line, you're out.
So the more money you start to make off of it, the more profit you should start to tighten up your stops a little bit.
Exactly. It's rising, rising, rising. For instance, we had a stock, it doubled on us, and we tightened up our stop, and we got stopped out of because it was down 20%.
But okay.
So we had it up 100%, lost 20%, 80% was our out. We got out. So, we'll take that gain. Let's say you buy at support and it breaks support right away.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got to get out.
Yeah.
Just get out. Don't worry about it. You can buy it back.
Uh-huh.
Every time it's a little bit different, Mike, on each stock. And I would reset it at least once a week. Take a look at them and say, okay. And think about how much money you want to lose of your gains.
Okay.
You may say, I'm just going to hold this for the long haul and not going to worry about it. That's okay, too. Long haul means years, though, not months.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so that's okay, too. So you can make different rules for each one, but you need to make the rules and adjust them on a weekly basis if you're a trader and you want to lock in profits.
Okay, thanks for the help.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for the call. 888-99-CHART, we're talking about risk. We talk about it all the time, and I know you're bored with it, but it is something that is extremely important. And I don't want the Wall Street to fool you about risk. Many people buy bonds, and they tend to reduce the risk of a portfolio. They do, and that is absolutely true. Okay, but bonds can have risk associated with them, and as people try to reach for better and higher yields, the bonds pan into more, they buy worse and worse quality bonds. And what that means is you're taking more and more and more risk. The low-risk bonds don't pay much. So I need you to be careful. And how to be careful? Well, first of all, understand how much risk you're really willing to take in a bond. If the bond pays you 5%, okay, over the next 10 years, what if it goes down 20% in value? would you still hold on to it? Would you buy it if you knew that was going to happen? See, so you know, there's risk. If interest rates go up, bond values go down. How much of that risk are you willing to take? Make sure you only have the highest quality bonds and fixed income, other securities. Lower expenses help greatly. So look at the low expense part. I like the latter of the bonds. Therefore, you get short-term bonds, and you have one a little longer, and a little longer, and a little longer, but I don't go out very far, 4 or 5 years at the most. And so they all constantly come and due. And you know what? CDs and treasuries will come back eventually. Some point down the road, I might be 5, 10 years, I don't know. But those are fixed income instruments that help smooth out your portfolio. Right now you can't make much in them, but maybe you should take a look at them if you want to reduce your risk. It's all about risk. And you know, we do have a method to gauge your risk, and you know you can go to our website and take the risk questionnaire. It's very short, it won't take you very long, and it'll help gauge your risk. And we'll give you a risk score from 0 to 100. And just so you know, the market, which is a pretty high risk, the S&P 500 risk score is 80. So that if you want to take less risk than the market, you better have a score way below 80. Right? If you want to take more risk in the market, it should be higher than 80. You know, if you want to take market risk, just buy the S&P 500 and you'll be taking market risk, and that score is 80. And if you answer the questions honestly, that's the trick. Answer those questions honestly. Really think about yourself, because they ask questions like, would you be comfortable with a 30% loss? Would you? We're open to your money's questions and comments, 888-99-CHART. That's how you can get through right now. I'm Steve Peasley, and I'm glad you're with me today.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast, Investment Resources That Come Straight from the Desks of Professional Investors. Special watch lists created to give investors an idea of the type of investments the pros consider. The webinar archive provides access to various lessons about how to invest properly. It's all there for InvestTalk insiders and much more. Just click on the InvestTalk tab on investtalk.com to sign up. It's free. And now more InvestTalk.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Let's go to Ken in Temecula. How are you doing, Ken?
Hey, Steve. I'm very interested in technical analysis. I'm relatively a new investor in individual stocks.
Uh-huh.
And I use the MACD and the stochastic indicators.
Those are good indicators.
Evaluating charts. But sometimes the MACD, when it's below the zero line and it looks like it's in a buy trend, mm-hmm. And then I look at the stochastic indicator, it might be above 80 mm-hmm. and looking like a sell signal. And I wanted to know if there's a correlation between the two, or how would you use...
In that situation, you wouldn't react to the stock at all, because you have total divergence of two indicators, which indicates confusion to you as a trader. That would say, wait a minute, and you're reading them right. You're saying, wait a minute, one's a buy, one's a sell. What am I supposed to do? In those cases, do nothing.
Okay.
You want to look at other indicators to confirm.
Okay.
But what I like to do, use the MACD and accumulation and distribution line and the on-balance volume line, I'm looking at all three. If they're all three lined up, that gives me more comfort.
Those four indicators combined together looking good rather than one looking good and the other maybe not looking good.
Exactly. Okay. And you got to make sure the stock price itself also kind of tracks. Okay, well, that's a good buy point, too, on the stock price itself. Ken, the more you look at these charts, the better you'll get at it.
Very interesting.
Okay, yeah, it is interesting.
A little complicated, a little confusing, but interesting.
It's like learning a whole language, Ken, a whole different language of some kind. That's what it's doing. Good luck with it, Ken. Hope it works for you.
Thanks.
888-99-CHART. So what do you do if you're a senior citizen? You're 55 years old. You have life insurance, and you have long-term care insurance. What are you going to do if they start increasing the premiums? Because you are going to get closer and closer to fixed income and premiums on these things. Like, for instance, there you could see a 100% increase in the next few years if you're 55 or older in your long-term care insurance. Now, years and years ago, they used to be level pay, meaning they never increased your premiums. Years and years and years ago. But about 10 or 15 years ago, they started to build into these policies increases, ability to increase premium based on just increase the premium. So what's going to happen, and what I see happening, when I talk to a lot of people, they start complaining about the cost of these things they've had for years, and all of a sudden the premiums are jumping up. And the insurance company is not stupid. They know when they jump up the prices that they may lose business. But they were stupid enough years ago not to charge enough. They didn't charge enough to pay the losses that they're starting to have now roll in with baby boomers getting older, and they're starting to have to pay claims. And so all of a sudden, they need more premiums. And that's what's happened. So what do you do? I'm not keen on long-term care insurance. I'm not. I never have been. I used to work for the insurance industry. And the reason why I'm not is because I know that it's not used as much as people think it was used, or it doesn't help them as much as they think it will help them. And I just don't have a real strong conviction to own it. I'm not saying never, but I wouldn't. I am not. I am self-insuring myself for long-term care. I'm saving up enough money to make sure I can handle that. So I'm not too keen. Life insurance? I don't understand why an older person even has life insurance. Why do you need it? Why do you need life insurance? What for? Because you know how I think about paying off mortgages. Your mortgage should be paid off when you retire. So if you die and leave your spouse with a mortgage, that's not a good idea. But you shouldn't have one as you get older. And you should have money saved up as you get older. So why do you need life insurance? I wouldn't have it. That's my personal opinion, by the way. Robert, San Diego. How you doing, Robert?
Thank you. One quick question. Growth rate, earnings rate, future earnings rate, or earnings times growth rate. Is it sales growth rate?
No. You want to use earnings growth rate first. Then look at the sales growth rate. Because you can't have your earnings growth rate keep going up when sales is not. So you can't ignore sales, but I would like you to use the earnings growth rate to come up with the calculation.
Okay.
But if you see the earnings going up 20% and the sales going flat, then that 20% is probably not sustainable and you don't want to use it.
And how would that vary if you were to use, say, forward earnings or projected earnings versus a forward PE to figure in the value of stock?
Okay, I generally do it both ways. Forward PE and forward sales and growth. Okay, growth of earnings, growth of sales. And then I also use the five-year PE range, low and high. What it does, Robert, is try to give you a box. Okay, this is about where you think it should go. This is a quick and dirty way to evaluate something, you know, to get a future value price of a stock.
Excellent. You're a fount of information. Thank you.
Thanks, Robert. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. How to value a stock. Also, Robert, I'll just tell you real quick. My formula, it's earnings growth times next year's growth rate times next year's earnings per share, only works really good on the mid-size type of companies. Mid-size. Not really good on the really small ones and not really good on the really big ones. Why? Because the really small ones grow very, very fast, or should be, and the really big ones grow pretty slow. So using that formula messes you up. It doesn't work as well. When you're investing, you're taking risks. No matter what you're saying, you are taking risks. Good money management is all about managing that risk, keeping it within, you know, keeping it within certain parameters in conjunction with the reward you're expecting from the risk you're taking. It's hard sometimes to figure that out. So we like to start, though, by having you take the risk test. At KPP Financial, we use an award-winning tool that you can use, too. It's free. All you do is answer the questions. It's right there on InvestTalk.com. Just click on the InvestTalk tab.
Here are the directions for reaching Steve this afternoon with your question. Just call 888-99-CHART, C-H-A-R-T. Have a question about how best to get into the market? Or maybe you're feeling unsure about your current investments. That's what this is all about. This is Invest Talk.
Vic in Bay Area. How you doing, Vic?
I'm good, Steve. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. Just had a quick question. I'm actually scheduled to meet up with you here in the very near future. I know we're going to have limited time, and I thought this might be useful to other people. So
okay. On
the 401ks, pretty much that's all I've dealt with so far in my investment career.
Okay.
I would like to start taking off and doing some of the stock individually. Does one get dinged for that as far as if you cash in some of the 401k investment money and invest in stocks, or is that kind of like trading in for a mutual fund?
Good question, Vic. It depends on your particular 401k, for instance. Many 401ks give you limited options of what you can buy, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, and that's mostly what is out there. But some 401ks, the one I have for my employees, allows you to opt out of those options and trade individual stocks in a 401k. You have to ask your employer if that's available to you.
Okay.
And the employer has to pay for that option in behalf of its employees, but it's only $100, $200 a month. It's not a ton of money. Now, if you took the money out of the 401k and bought stocks outside, you're going to get paid tax and penalty, and you don't really want to do that.
All right.
And when we meet, Vic, bring me your selection so I can take a look at what you get to choose from.
Yeah, we'll do. I'll definitely bring that. And then also, there was something that I wanted to ask you about, a plan that's supposed to solidify your mortgage in 9 years, and I don't know how the heck they can do that, but I'll bring that along as well.
We'll talk about that, too. I've done those kinds of things myself and have gotten burned and gotten great benefit from it. Depends on the plan.
Okay, good deal. I'll bring that along as well. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Thanks, Vic. Appreciate the call. Look forward to seeing you. 888-99-CHART, taxpayers. Did you know there's a large percentage of our population that pays no income tax at all? A very large percentage pays no income tax at all. None. Now, they do pay other taxes, and they pay taxes. There's two kinds of basic broad categories of taxes. One's called regressive, and one's called progressive. Regressive and progressive. Okay, so what is a regressive tax? Now, a regressive tax means it hurts, it takes a higher percentage of income from the modest income earners than it does from the higher income earners. Social Security, Medicare are both regressive taxes. Income tax is progressive, and that is a tax that takes a higher percentage of the income the more income you make. That's called the progressive tax. Now, some people like to say a regressive tax is not fair and a progressive tax is. And I'm going to take exception to that. I'm going to say you're going to have unfair taxes, both regressive and progressive. Both of them, they can be unfair. What is fair? What is a definition of fair? That's hard for me to know. Is it fair if you make $20,000 a year and pay no income tax? Is that fair? I'm not saying if it's right or wrong, but is it fair? Is it fair if you make $150,000 a year and you pay 50% income tax? Is that fair? I don't know. You know, for me, I don't know. What I can tell you is the government seems to always want more and more and more and more tax. You know, they always seem to want more. They never seem to want less. They're always coming up with a new tax for everybody. But what is fair, what isn't fair, I think that's you know, that's really something that should be explored, should be discussed, instead of just automatically assuming regressive and progressive is one's fair, one's not. That's not true. That's not true. It depends on the tax. Okay, let's go to Jim in Carlsbad. How are you doing, Jim?
The question I had was about a mutual fund versus the exchange-traded fund. Mm-hmm. What exactly is the difference between those?
Okay, ETFs are fairly new, and there's lots, and it's kind of exploding, and take a lot of money out of the mutual funds, so this is kind of an interesting thing. The mutual fund has a manager, okay? He may be a large-cap mutual fund. He may be a small-cap. He may have a discipline that he is employing, and he states that in the prospectus. And he says, I'm going to buy large-cap stocks. So he goes out and buys those large cap, and he manages, buys and sells, and he tries to manage that portfolio to make money. A ETF, exchange traded fund, is an unmanaged fund. It follows indexes like the QQQs or the SPYs, or it can follow a sector like the insurance sector or the banking sector or oil sector. It could be an ETF that just has those group of stocks in them, but they're not managed at this point. Most of the time, they're not managed. They're not managing the ETFs. You're just buying that group of stocks, and there you go. So one is much more managed than the other. On the other hand, ETFs are much cheaper because they're not managed. It's the cheaper fees than a mutual fund. So
ETFs are more focused on industry groups then, and rather than capital value?
And areas of the world, even country-specific sometimes, or just areas of the market, yes.
Great.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate the call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to John in Walnut Creek. How are you doing, John?
Hi, very good. Thanks for taking my call.
Appreciate it.
I was just calling to get your advice. My wife and I are 37 years old, and we both maxed out our 401ks. We maxed out our Roth. We have two young kids. We put away about $200 into each one of their 529 plans. What advice do you give for additional savings that we have? Do we put it in a CD, or I don't want to just leave it in savings. So,
John, first of all, do you have money set aside for emergencies?
Yes.
Okay. Now, do you have a mortgage?
Yes.
What kind of mortgage is it? A 30-year fix? A 15-year fix?
It's a 30-year fix.
Okay. Do you pay extra on it every month?
No, we don't.
It says you're maxing out your 401k. You're putting money aside for your children. You have enough emergency money set aside. The next step I would do is, do you have any credit card debt?
No.
Then I probably pay a little extra on my mortgage every month.
Okay.
What I did for years is you write out a check for the mortgage payment, you write out another check for $200 or $100, whatever you're going to do, and you write on that check, apply to the principal. That takes your principal down every month. And then what happens is as that eats down the principal, more of the normal monthly mortgage checks goes to the principal too.
Yeah, so I guess you're kind of earning money on this. Saving money from not paying so much interest.
Exactly. If you ever figured out a 30-year fixed, you're actually paying, after 30 years paying that payment, you'll be paying like 2.5-3 times the amount of the money you borrowed. Did you know that?
That's very good advice. You're investing in real estate.
Exactly. You're taking that investment, pulling it down. That real estate, it's a real estate investment. That's all it is. If you have those other things already set up, that is a very good way to invest in money because you're already maxing out your retirement account. So that's important. And you're already putting money aside for your kids' education. That's very important. You don't have any credit card debt. What else can you do? Get that mortgage on you. In your late 30s now, you want to have that mortgage paid off by the time you're in your 50s.
Yeah, that'll be good.
It will work if you do this. You will have that done. You will.
Okay.
John, I appreciate the call.
Best advice as always. Thank you very much.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it. 888-99-CHART. That's our number. I'd love to talk to you. You know, we're going to talk about the national debt. National debt's probably between $20 trillion. You know that's a debt ceiling, right? So when the next president comes into office, one of the first things he's going to deal with is the debt ceiling. Remember how well that was in the big news just a number of years ago? Oh, debt. And then they voted to put it out to $20 trillion, and that'll take forever to get there. Well, we're there now. $20 trillion. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. What's your question? What does $20 trillion look like? Trillion. What are your tax implications of selling your home? Do you know? Let's talk about it. If you want to, give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Let's go to Bob and El Sobrante. How are you doing, Bob?
Hey, I've got a question about two measurements that you often use. One, the 200-day moving average, and the other, the level of the Dow. And aren't they different now than they were, I mean, as measurements, as gauges, than they were, say, a year ago?
Yes, because at 200, so, the moving average moves, and the level of the Dow moves even more violently.
Yeah, because I'm looking at the 200-day moving averages of a number of stocks, and it seems like most good stocks are above their 200-day moving average significantly. And so how do you use that as a buying-selling gauge if they've just broken through it?
Remember, Bob, the 200-day moving average is a long-term moving average. That's for investors that buy and pretty much hold. They don't really care about any other indicators. So the 200-day moving average is a very good indicator to tell you if the stock is in a long-term bull phase or a long-term bear phase.
Right, but then if you're looking for stocks to buy and most good stocks have broken through it strongly, then how do you use that as a measurement?
A lot of companies will move down to close to the 200-day moving average. You want to buy them if they find support at that 200-day moving average. Now, they may not get down that far. And the more extended a stock is beyond its 200-day moving average, Bob, the more risk you're taking buying that stock. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Keith in Sonoma. How are you doing, Keith?
Yeah, Steve, I had a quick question for you.
Sure.
If I want information and to chat with other people to play a saxophone, there's a forum that I go to online, and I can talk to people all over the world about various aspects. Mm-hmm. Is there something like that for stocks?
There is a lot of chat rooms in the investment websites.
Yeah.
Almost all of them have chat rooms. Be very careful with that, Keith, because you don't know who's a pumper dumper out there.
Yeah, that's what I want. I want more like ordinary people like myself trying to educate and make it do a better job of managing my own portfolio.
I can understand that. But see, when you get into the investment field, you've got a lot of scammers out there.
Okay.
That always scares me when you sit there and you don't really know who's on the other end. I'm just going to warn you, there are good, solid information out there. There is. And, you know, you can get a pretty good feel for what companies are doing. But every once in a while, there's a scammer out there inside that little chat room, guy who's trying to sell something. He'll convince you to move to this or to move to that, and he sounds very convincing. That's what I fear, Keith. I fear that. If you want to learn more and more and more stuff, reading is always a good place. I know that sounds not exciting. You want to talk to people. Come to our conference. All it is a teaching conference. We don't try to sell you a thing.
It sounds good. If my back holds up, I'm going to try and get down there.
Yeah. There's no selling. We'll give you breakfast, and, you know, it's pretty reasonable, and we'll give you all kinds of handouts to help you. I really do love doing those conferences because of the teaching aspect of it.
Okay, Steve. Thank you.
Thanks, Keith. National debt is going to reach $20 trillion. $20 trillion. What does that look like? Okay, try to give you some perspective on how much money that is. This is a debt. We are going to owe we're getting very close. By the time the next president comes aboard, we are going to have we're going to hit $20 trillion. Okay, what does it look like? The entire market capitalization of the S&P 500 is $19 trillion. Meaning that if you had $20 trillion, you can own all 500 of the largest companies on our exchange and have $1 trillion left over. Okay, can't visualize that. How about this? All the gold production that we make have every year, every ounce of gold taken out of the ground every year, if you took that money to pay down our national debt, it'd take 155 years to pay it off. All the gold found every year. Okay? Does that give me a concept? How about this? If you took all the currency all of it. All the dollars, yen, wands, took all the currency in the world right now. Every penny, every nickel, dime, quarter, every currency. Okay, if you took all that, put it in a pile, you'd have $5 trillion. Remember our debt, $20 trillion. Okay, how about this? One more, I'll give you one more. If you took all the oil production worldwide, everything, every drop of oil, and you took that money that oil made, it'd take you 146 years to pay off the $20 trillion national debt. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that sad that we owe that much money? Our time is up for the hour. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody else at KPP, we want to thank you for listening today and join us next week.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.